Good morning. I'm looking forward to hearing your voices today. We've been sitting together in silence all week, and I've talked to a couple of you, but I'm looking forward to us hearing each other's voices a little bit more today. So I'll say some preliminary words, and then I hope we can have some conversation. I would like to tell you, however, that I am feeling a bit fragile this morning. I have a new pain in my hand, and it's some sort of arthritic pain, and it was persisting all night last night, and could not find a strategy to calm it down. So I did not sleep so well last night. So that's just to report my current state. However, I am pleased to let you know that the pain isn't so bad right now. It seems to have finally calmed down a bit. On the one hand, when we hear the words of the teaching from Nan Xuan, every day mind is the way, there's one of our ears, maybe one side of our brain, that might hear that and say, "Oh boy, am I in trouble. Oh boy, if people knew how I thought, if people knew about my internal dialogue, it's a good thing that the skill of mind reading is underdeveloped in other people, or, I'd really be in trouble." We might identify with the story of the two monks that were walking in the mountains, and the one monk planted his staff and said, "Right here is the summit, is the summit of the mystic peak." And the other monk said, "What a pity." So if everyday mind is the summit of the mystic peak, actually, Nan Xuan is, at least he's starting his dialogue with these words, everyday mind is the way. I think it's kind of provocative. I think he's being somewhat of a provocateur with his student there, Zhao Zhou. He wants to get the conversation rolling, and he certainly does with that phrase. Because it's not intuitive. It's not readily apparent, at least to an everyday mind, how that everyday mind is the way. Because as the Buddhist founders and adepts have noted, everyday mind are which you could take on, and I said on the one hand, so you could take, that phrase to mean everyday, untrained, deluded, concept proliferating mind. That kind of mind. And the old masters, I mean the founders of Buddhist understanding and philosophical, psychological inquiry. They came up with a word for this quality of mind, and it's called prapancha. Maybe some of you know this word, prapancha. It means the tendency towards conceptual elaboration. It is the it is the function of the mind that receives sensory experience and then processes that sensory experiences through the self, through the ego, if you will. For Yogacara fans, through manas, okay? Receives sensory input, processes it through the self, and on that, in that processing, creates conceptual elaboration, creates stories about the sensory experience, elaborative stories, proliferating stories, very imaginative stories. And oftentimes, the stories are one-sided because they've been processed through the self and they've been distorted. The sensory experience has been distorted and commented on and manipulated by the self into concepts that aren't necessarily our best friend. Luckily for us, we have a practice of dis-elaboration. I came up with some words. Let's see. I wrote them down. Paring down, dis-elaborating, that's a word I think I made up, pruning or undecorating. I had that analogy in my talk Monday about, you know, the unadorned mind. So we have a practice of looking directly, as directly as we can, as clear, with the clearest eyes we can, at this process of conceptual elaboration. And sometimes we call this the practice also of non-attachment. So seeing that there is sensory experience, but cutting off at the point of conceptual elaboration, if the little bud of conceptual elaboration starts to open, we don't let it. We cut it off at that point. So and this we return just to our sensory experience. Just, you know, with the ears we hear and with the eyes we see, but no further conceptualizing based on what is heard and what is seen and what is thought. We don't conceptualize on top of our thinking. So this is what we've been hopefully, you know, encouraging ourselves to do this week is dis-elaborating, non-proliferating. Oh, that's a better word. This is our prapancha is the proliferation of mental constructs, mental concepts, And practice is the non-proliferation. We're familiar with that word, right? They apply it to weapons and so forth. You know, non-proliferate. Don't distribute these weapons, you know, all around the place. Let's not have those weapons. And concepts are weapons. So let's be very careful, you know, about how we distribute them. Be very, very, very conscious about how we distribute concepts. And it may be very appropriate much of the time, actually, to not proliferate concepts. And as we become more adept in practice, we find that this is one of the skills that we have. Oh, somebody wants to be admitted. Please come. Dave is coming. So, you know, we find that we have more capacity to see the bud stage of conceptual elaboration and not allow it to flower. And this is so helpful in our relationships, in our work, in our in our own internal dialogue too, in our own internal, what do we allow to flower, and what do we allow to grow? So in the story, you know, the story moves. Nan Xuan's story, Everyday Mind is the Way. The story moves from Everyday Mind is the Way to, it's like when you arrive here, when you arrive, and I'll submit that when you arrive at the practice, and you practice the practice of non-proliferation, when you arrive here, it's like the vast blue sky, or some translations say it's like an empty room. How could you say it's good or bad? How could you say yes or no? How could you say right or wrong? I'm thinking of that Rumi poem now. Out beyond the boundary of right doing and wrong doing, there's a field. I'll meet you there. So it's this is the story, this dialogue between Nan Xuan and Zhaozhou. It revolves between these two poles. And I think I brought up the analogy, or not the analogy, but I guess it's an analogy that Suzuki Roshi made about the stepladder, you know, this stepladder. And he talked about a stepladder as, you know, we can't live without delusion, but we can't base our life on delusion. We can't establish we don't want to establish ourselves on delusion, but we don't leave delusion behind. So we don't just say, get thee away, you know, everyday mind of conceptual elaboration and proliferation. We just acknowledge it. We know it is part of us, and we work with it in our practice day in and day out. Dave must be having internet problems. He is trying to come again. Now he's made it, I think. Hello, Dave. See, you must be having some internet problems. We're here having a talk, and you're muted, but if you'd like to say something, please do.
Yes, I've been having internet problems, but only in this room.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
We've been talking about the story again. Maybe you heard it on Monday about Everyday Mind is Away.
Yes.
In any case. Yeah, so I basically just said everything over again that I said Monday, so you're good. And just in different words. What I'd like to talk about is, and this is where I would like to hear from you, is when we're practicing. This has been an interesting sesshin, right? Because we've had five periods. Some of us, anyway, have been sitting five periods a day, most of the days, and so we've had we have a good amount of practice, but we've had these long gaps between from the morning until the evening, so we could engage in everyday tasks and cooking and whatever else we're doing to sustain ourselves during the week. Hopefully, myself, I haven't had to run around too much, which is nice. Mostly been home, just taking care of things. But I think that when we when we're practicing like this, we're practicing a little bit more intensely than we usually do. We find that it is a little bit easier to take our practice off of the cushion. And we find that we engage one of the problems with conceptual elaboration is that it divides things into inside and outside, or me and others, and or me and things, or myself and objects. And when myself and objects, or me and, or myself and things, or myself and other people are firmly divided, then there is a tendency to treat those so-called externals a little roughly, kind of roughly, and there's even a tendency to see those things for their use value, and use them as objects, just for our own satisfaction, and only see them that way, and this even extends to other people. And just, we see other people as in their role of how they serve us, what they can do for me. And I think when we're practicing like this week, and we work with food, we work with, whatever task that we're doing, one of the things that I think becomes possible is this a more caring approach to our the objects and the tasks and the people that we interact with as we're moving about. And there, I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again because it just rose in my mind. When I first went to Zen Center, this was many years ago when I was a young student at San Francisco Zen Center, and one of the senior people came to me, and she had something to give me, and I don't remember what it was, but it was some object that I don't know. She was loaning me a book, or I don't know what it was. Maybe it was a book. And, you know, I just went to take the book from her. And she looked at me, you know, in a certain way. And she held the book in a certain way. And my body just relaxed. And I realized this was a moment, and that she really meant to give me this book or whatever it was. And she really meant for this exchange to, you know, not just be something practical or just to get it done or something like that. It was, I'm giving you this book. And please take it. And this was all, there weren't any words, but I realized that she really meant it. She really meant to give me this book. And this sounds like such a small thing, but it stayed with me, because I don't know if anybody in the world had ever handed me anything like that. And it had a big impact on me. And obviously, since I still remember it, you know, 30 years or probably more, many years later. So I'm wondering, like, for you, how this week has landed. And I'd like to hear your stories of perhaps, you know, a different approach or more caring or whatever has jumped out at you or maybe not, you know. But anyway, I'd like to hear from people and have this be more of a conversation. So I see Larry's hands up.
Oh, what a relief to open my mouth. Well, this has been quite interesting, Rohatsu, in the format. It's, you know, not to say right or wrong or good or bad, but it's been different than our other ones. Jim, I think you said somewhere earlier in the talk, good thing that we're not mind readers, but maybe I'm thinking maybe you did read my mind in your talk about inquiring of us what has arisen, and talking about using the word caring, because sometime this morning while sitting, the apparatus of conceptualizing was going. I somehow in my head was this person on my Facebook list who recently has become given to a lot of criticizing others, really critical, particularly directed to the governor of California and the nerve of him to stop people from doing whatever they want and keeping their businesses open and you know, and my mind is going about, you know, the nerve of this person to think only of themselves and not think of the community and on, this goes in my head. And then I started thinking, well, what is this person really doing? They maybe have 100, 200 people on their Facebook list, and they're making a statement of criticism. They're shouting out to 200 people on the planet, their idea, their thought, and then somehow shouting out changed in my mind, and it became crying. And I just had a instant change of the way I looked at this person. And all I could think of now was not being critical of this person or, but this was her cries of the world. This was the cries of the world. And I instantly had this feeling of, compassion for this person. So this is just what happened to me this morning. So thank you.
Kenny.
Yeah, this has been a weird week because I don't usually get up as early as I do. So I get kind of grumpy when I am not fully rested. So I've had to deal with that. I just was going to tell a story. I went to the grocery store and I didn't think there was going to be that many people at an early hour because of like the Monday after Thanksgiving, but everybody was there. It was really weird that all the places that I wanted to get something, there was a person standing there for a long period of time examining something. And then I go to a different spot and there'd be another person doing the same. And I was like, this is weird. Like, I realized, hey, you're in a retreat this week. So I had a change of mind, but I was thinking the universe is trying to tell me something because every place I want to go, there's somebody and my frustration is rising. So I had a change of mind and then I just kind of finished shopping and I didn't care if there was a big line or anything like that. So that was just one of several incidents this week like that. So thank you.
Brendan.
Yes, thank you. So this is my first Shashin. This is my first full day sit as well. And it is very interesting because I know it is from what longtime practitioners are used to. And I've had a lot of, coming into my first Shashin, I've had a lot of expectations of it and of myself, which is not, that's pretty common for me in most areas to kind of go in, certain expectations. And it's been interesting seeing how the week has gone. And I've really kept, I feel like Jim really set us up well for this Shashin with this talk about ordinary mind, because this has just always been a really difficult thing in my life, just always feeling bad about by extremes. And it's a issue in my practice too, because I easily fall into this idea that this is a practice is something for me to complete, that I have to attain. I have to become a better person, fix myself. And there's a lot of days where calming down and practicing really works into that classic good or bad kind of thinking. And then other days I kind of am able to see past that. And so I've gone back and forth throughout this week, but this idea of ordinary mind has really been helpful, because at times where I found my expectations this week, particularly of myself, either in meditation, feeling like I'm not concentrating hard enough, or out of meditation and feeling like I'm falling back into my regular habits of behavior and thinking, I just calmly remembered that this is my mind. This is my ordinary mind. This is what I have to work with. And that is okay. And I can just experience this life, this existence with this mind and just let go enough so that I can live with it, enjoy it, and practice with it and learn more about what this mind is and how it relates to this existence. So in the sort of dropping away of these extra expectations, I've really, particularly today so far, I've just really had a very realistic and really helpful shishin. And thank you, Jim, and thank you to everyone for sharing in it. This has been a wonderful first experience.
Thank you for very excellent augmentation to the points that I was trying to make. You said it so well. Clem.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Your talk this morning was really resonating with me, because when you were talking about conceptualization, there was a bunch of stuff going through my head, mainly how it takes place primarily through, at least in my case, through an internal dialogue. And in some ways, I think I was practicing even before I came to practice, because it occurred to me some time ago, many years ago, actually, that my internal dialogue was entirely too active and I needed to learn to shut it off. And I've been reading, through the Nikayas. I'm currently working on the Samyutta Nikaya. And one of the things I read recently, I thought was quite interesting. It was talking about the duality of existence, like you have dark and light, good and bad. It goes on and on. And really the only thing that you need to do to avoid to do good is to avoid doing bad, because good will happen in and of itself. So my practice is to refrain from internal dialogue that comes up with all these conceptualizations, which in turn leads to volitional actions, which create a lot of suffering in the world. So my response to the session has been that during these long breaks, I have actually put on my boots and gone outside with a shovel and done a lot of tasks that needed to be doing that don't actually require a lot of thought. And I think my plants have benefited by this action, as have I. So that's about all I have to say. It's been a wonderful experience so far. Thank you.
I thought of, I was going to, one phrase that's, thank you, Clem. You stimulated me to remember this, these lines from the Harmony of Difference and Equality. Eye and sight, ear and sounds, nose and smell, tongue and taste. Thus, with each and every thing, depending on these roots, the leaves spread forth. The whole process must return to the source. Okay, so that those lines, describe, their sensory experience. And then there's, based on that sensory experience, there's this elaboration. And our practice is, bringing it back to the source. Bring all that elaboration back to the source. Let's see, Karen Hamilton.
Thank you, Jim. I also have been doing some tasks that don't require very much thinking. One of them was picking up leaves in the yard and on the sidewalk. And I had noticed the day before I did this that, one of my main pet peeves in life lately are gas-powered leaf blowers. And I was watching down the street as I went for a walk, and I watched down the street two men who were, I don't know, they were like soldiers mowing down the yard. They were, and the leaves were just flying, and then one of them pointed it up to the tree and all the leaves fell down onto the ground. And so at first I was responding that, those terrible men, they're doing that, making that big noise. But then I stepped back and I was kind of enjoying just the motion of the leaves and all of the leaves falling down at once. Just kind of putting on a show. But then later when I was picking up my own leaves, I thought, well, I just went with the broom and a picker upper, I don't know what to call it. So I picked up my piles of leaves and I thought, and I was feeling kind of happy because I could just feel good about honoring my own preferences of wanting to be quiet, wanting to do it quietly, and that that today I'm being a monk. I'm doing it my way. I'm doing it quietly. So, anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Ashley?
So I was hesitating and debating if I wanted to share this with you all or not, because it's really personal and kind of dark. But I just wanted to say that the compassion I have for myself is the hardest part of my practice. I am pretty good at, you know, finding a way to be compassionate towards others no matter what's going on, but towards myself, I don't have the same abilities, and I'm actually a self-harmer. I've been cutting myself for the past year, and this entire week I have not at all, which is really amazing for me because I have never gone a full week not doing it at all. And in between our sessions, I've just been focusing on compassion towards myself. And if I want to be compassionate towards all beings, that includes me, and just reminding myself of that. So thank you so much.
Will? You're muted, Will. I can unmute you.
Oh. Am I unmuted?
Yes.
I wanted to say at first that I'm sorry that your hand is hurting, and I hope that you begin to feel better. And I know that all of us probably are not going to have a chance to speak. There's so many of us to say all that we're experiencing. I was wondering if people might want to write something up and we can all read each other's experience. I just wanted to throw that out there. But what this week has afforded me, it's the luxury of exploring all of my thoughts and feelings. And I've been working during the day, and I found myself, I can't wait till 5 o'clock to sit in that silence again and get into that space again. So it's been really positive in that regard. And then You mentioned about your Monday night talk, and I was reminded of one thing that you said about delusions being a ladder. And I've been working, well, just kind of musing over that. And over the weekend, I was substituting the word delusions for negative thoughts, heavy emotions, and our ladders. And then I also said, well, I'll start off small. I'll say annoyances are ladders. And I was experiencing spontaneous itching, like here and here. And I said, I'll start with something small like that. And I would just put all of my focus on or attention on a little itch. And I found that within seconds, it was like a healing balm. The itch, as extreme as it might have been, it would just kind of dissipate. And I'm saying I could start with something small like that and maybe move to negative thoughts, negative emotions, and things like these things. So it's been a helpful teaching, and I'll always remember that, you know, that delusions are ladders in big and small ways.
Well, thank you very much. And Ashley, I just wanted to say I was a little overcome with emotion when you spoke, but I just want to thank you for being willing to tell us what you told us. Thank you so much. Barbara?
Thank you all for all your sharings. Ashley, I have a lot of simpatico with you. Well, my conceptual mind knows that it can't have its way with me if it comes on like gangbusters or like a soldier or like the leaf blower. But my conceptual mind is cutting, and it's a prankster. You know, it's it says, oh, you like this sitting in silence thing? Well, here, let me help you with that. When this is over, here's what you're going to do next. So my conceptual mind is a prankster. It knows that's how it can inch its way in. Kind of like many of you know my dog Max that lives with me. I've got my Sashim yurt sit up in my middle of my living room. And when he gets anxious and would like my attention, he just circles around the outside of the yurt with his little tapping, 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 tapping. To try to draw my attention away from my sitting to what his needs might be. So, a little bit of levity has been helpful to me. Thank you.
Barry and then Dora Lee.
I just wanted to thank Ashley for being brave and sharing her story. I'm sure it's cathartic to talk about it, but it's also compassionate in that I think it sparks, you know, sparks something in other people to hear it too. So just thank you very much for sharing.
Doralee, are you coming?
I'm coming. There I am. Well, something that's been, in a way, challenging this week, partly because I've still been working, but also I'm living with my husband, and we're living a COVID sequestered life, so we're together in the space, and even though I'm kind of off to the side in my own space, but, our usual patterns of interacting are sort of in the room all the time. And so I've felt some sort of, challenge, I guess, to sustain practicing silence and, at the same time, honoring our relationship. But So I've been living with this, and somehow this morning, I was so filled with this large silence and stillness that was more like a gift than something in me. But it was so powerful that it just felt like there was this ease of sustaining that, even in the sort of dancing interactions with my husband. And it just sort of revealed to me, you know, this potential for the stillness to permeate even moments of talking, even moments of work. So I'm very grateful for this. Thank you.
I think this talk is supposed to end right about now, but if there's anyone else that wants to speak, please let me know. I just want to note that, oh, Becerra.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, everyone. I just wanted to share, this seems trivial, but it's, you know, ordinary mind is full of little things. I'm working on the Vote Forward campaign to finish up some letters that are going to be sent to Georgia voters or potential voters, and they are due the 7th. And so I was, in some of our breaks, I was writing letters. And I have done this before for the general election, but somehow when I was writing the names on the envelopes, they weren't just names. I could feel these individual human beings coming to me as I wrote their names down. And it was a very gentle and intimate experience, which was odd, but it was beautiful too.
Linda, were you wanting to say something?
Just when Darlie talked about what her experience, this light bulb came up, and I realized I live a silent life because I live alone. And I never really thought of it that way. I have really enjoyed this because I do feel you in my space, or whatever you want to call it. I do feel the presence of other beings, which normally for me is just that gray cat over there. And I've talked to her quite a bit this week and gotten to know her better, actually. But that is not a bad thing. I've probably intentionally lived alone most of my life, and I actually enjoy it. I don't have anybody to argue with or deal with other than myself, and that's quite enough. So, but thank you, everybody, for creating this space.
So we have the rest of today and a little bit of time tomorrow to sit together and keep arriving. You know, I think we're just arriving over and over in this empty room, and it, as Darlie said, you know, this is not something we go out and get. but we can participate in it, and we don't create it if we try not to create, even though there's like these analogies given, please don't create some kind of standard or goal, or, you know, I'm supposed to have this certain experience. That goes again, you know, that's like, you know, Nan Chuan saying, if you go toward it, you deviate from it. It runs away from you. So we can't, you know, we can hear about, you know, descriptions and things like that, but don't let the description get in your way. Don't let the description become some kind of end, because it's a continual process, and it's a continual learning. It's a continual sharing. It's a continual being, just who you are right now, without comparison. You're completely yourself, and that is such an amazing, you're the end point, you know, each of us is the end point of the entire evolutionary process of the universe right now. Not just human beings either. I'm not talking about just you human beings. I'm talking about everything that exists right now is this amazing gift, you know, this amazing evolution that's occurred that allows us to appreciate it. So we're just going to sit, you know, in great appreciation of our life and the life of others. And also, let me say at this time, you know, with great heart for the suffering of the world, which is pretty extreme right now. So let's remember that we are really, we're doing this work for others. We're doing this work for everyone. And we do this work, and it is work. There's work here to be done. We have work to do. But we do it, you know, because we have to believe, we have to have faith, and we do have faith that it helps and it makes a difference. And that's all we can ask. That's all we can ask to do.